Welcome to the Trino Community Broadcast.
Hello and welcome to another Trino Community Broadcast from beautiful Victoria in the night today, because I'm joined by three other speakers today who are on the other side of the globe. They are day ahead. For them, it's already Friday. We'll find more about all this today. We're going to talk about how Trino and RenAI can be used together. RenAI, you'll find out, is a text-to-SQL engine. And obviously with Trino, that's really cool because you can like use that text-to-SQL with all sorts of data sources. And we'll talk to William and Yadia from RenAI and also to Himanshu, who contributed that integration. But before we dive into that, we need to talk about releases. That's all right. Trino as a project, as you know, is very active and we are always releasing new stuff. And this time, even though it's only a short time away, we already have to cover three new releases. So three pretty big releases, and as you'll see. So first of all, we released Trino 4.58. This is very important as a release because we finally deactivated the legacy file system support on all catalogs. So if you have any catalog that uses Hive, Iceberg, Delta Lake, or Hudi connectors, you now must decide what file system you want to have enabled. So you need to add this property, file system native, Azure, GCS, S3, or Hadoop enabled, and set it to true, and then use the related configuration. This has been really good for us because these native enablements are much higher performant and better to implement and more tested. So we want everyone to switch to these native ones. If you really need to fall back onto the Hadoop one, you can, but ideally use the native ones. The documentation for the release and in general has migration guides and all that kind of stuff. So really important release. This will be a breaking change for people that upgrade and don't change those properties. It's gonna not start up in the cluster, but you've been warned. next, we have OpenTelemetry for tracing in the JDBC driver, which can be useful if you have a Java-based application that goes via the JDBC driver to Trino and then tracing all the way through from your client into Trino and maybe even to the data sources. We also have reduced transfer data from remote systems for large in-list queries in a whole bunch of connectors that have that performance improvement. As you know, performance improvements are always on our radar. So we have one big change in 4.58. Now, 4.59, another big change. The Docker container now uses Java 23. As you know, Java 23 came out in September, and it's already like bringing cool new features. And we are taking advantage of Java 22 for quite a while now, and Java 23 is enabling us to do further improvements. So we are now using Java 23 in the Docker container. Please test that, try it out, and let us know, because we are going to require Java 23 in one of the upcoming releases. Other smaller changes were the introduction of support for kilobytes instead of kilobytes, like with the base 10 versus base 2 kind of data in the CLI output. You can now configure the maximum concurrent requests on Azure on every node. Some people ran into trouble because Trino is too chatty, so it's too efficient, and Azure can't handle that. So you can, on very very active clusters, prevent Azure from complaining by throttling it basically a little bit. We added support to the WASB support for Azure Storage. We improved the file system caching, which obviously is useful with the Hive, Iceberg, and Delta Lake connector. And we removed the connector that's called the local file connector. Don't worry if you don't know about it. No one really knew about it. It just was able to access one local specific log file on the Trino cluster in that specific worker. It was basically a proof of concept kind of thing that never went anywhere. And we thought, well, for years we've been carrying this around. No one is actually using it, so we threw it away. We did the same with the ATOP connector, which just ran the ATOP command on the clusters, which is a Unix command for like process load on the computer. Well, that's kind of not what you do these days anymore. We have tracing and all these other modern features anyway. And we also removed the Raptor connector in 460, which, by the way, just came out today. So it's hot off the press. The major feature in 460, however, is that you can now use an Alluxio caching an Alluxio cluster as a caching system. This is interesting compared to the normal file system caching where objects are stored on the Trino cluster nodes. This is interesting where you have multiple Trino clusters and the caching is done on a separate cluster, the Alluxio cluster, and it acts as a cache between your object storage and Trino. So very interesting approach. Obviously only really useful if you have multiple clusters. It also, however, works even with Spark and stuff like that. So very cool feature, and thanks for the team from Alluxio contributing that. That's a really cool thing. And then last but not least, we got a whole bunch of performance improvements on the ClickHouse connector specifically. Thank you to Starburst for all those contributions, by the way. Really cool improvements on ClickHouse. We also have a bunch of other improvements on the Oracle connector, the SQL Server connector, and so on as well. So three really good releases with some very cool new features. Specifically, pay attention to this. This will potentially be interesting for you, and we want to see how this goes, right? Like everyone that does that upgrade so far has been enjoying the performance improvements, and we haven't had any major problems because we've been testing it for a long time ourselves already at Starburst for various use cases. So hopefully everyone else will enjoy that as well. So far, all the community users that have reached out and are using it have also had positive experience. But of course, if you find something, we'll fix it and work with you on finding out why is it even wrong. So those are our releases. There's some other improvements. Specifically, we updated the documentation, and I should show you that. If I go to the Trino website, we have this contribution and roles and developer guide documentation. The contribute section now has a section about pull requests and commits. So for those of you that help us in a Trino project, Trino itself or Trino Gateway or others, this will hopefully explain a bit how you write your commit messages with these guides, how you sort your commits, how you break up different commits. All of this helps us with the reviews. If the reviews are easy, then we can get your changes in faster, because ultimately we need to understand what you want to contribute. And working together in this manner hopefully makes it easier for everyone. One of the things is also, ideally you suggest a release note entry for your change. And here's some guidelines for that. So that's new now. Some of it is brand new. Some of it is just improved and found on a different section. So hopefully this will help everyone a little bit as well with their contributions. When you're contributing to Trino, one thing that you have to also keep in mind is you have to work with maintainers like myself and many others on the project. They are actually all listed on the roles page. So you find here there's the list of all the maintainers and then also the list of the sub-project maintainers. And that's one thing that I wanted to share as well. Christian Osiak, Jordan Zimmerman, and Pablo Arteaga all stood up and helped us, and they're working on the AWS proxy project. Very interesting project that we talked a little bit at the contributor call recently. We'll probably end up inviting them or talk about it more at the upcoming Trino Summit or other events. So stay tuned for that. And then also shout out to Jan Vaas for stepping up and also helping us on the Trino.js client. He also has some really cool news that we'll probably share shortly about what's going on in the Trino charts that he's also co-maintaining. So Jan is a busy man. He's doing a lot of cool stuff. So thank you and shout out to him as well. And of course, also shout out to all the contributors that give us all those cool changes. And that actually already gets me to our next topic, and that is the guest introduction. So we are going to have guests today. Himanshu is joining us all the way from India. Thank you for joining me today, Himanshu.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Manfred. Thank you guys for giving me a chance to talk here. And I am a full stack developer at Genuine full time and part time open source developer, open source contributor. and also open source lover, and I got to learn about Trino from the William Chang, CTO of the Kainer.
Awesome, and let's bring them on as well, huh? William is waiting in the background already, and Yadia as well. Thank you for joining us today. It's going to be an awesome conversation about all things Trino and Wren. So, William, what's your role? You, like Himanshu just mentioned, that he found out about Trino from you. So, where are you, and what do you? How do you know about Trino?
How do I know about Trino? Me or my company or team has actually a long history with Trino. Actually, because in our company, I'll later introduce more our product, but our first product, Kainer Enterprise, it's actually built on the foundation of a fork version of Trino. Yeah. So our members actually has many Trino contributors. And yeah. So it's pretty cool that we saw Himanshu would like to contribute to Trino integration.
Yeah, that's awesome. So that company that you're talking about, you don't have to be so shy. You're at Kainer, and Kainer is located in Taiwan, where we know there's lots of Trino users in Asia. We have contributors over there. We know there's lots of users also in China. It's great that you are holding up the flag for Trino for us over there. That's great.
Yeah.
So, and then also joining us is Yadia Colindres today.
Hey. Very nice to be here today.
So are you also with William over in Taiwan, or are you somewhere else?
No, I am in Taiwan. We see each other every Monday.
Every Monday. That's a day in the office, is it?
Yes.
That's awesome. Cool. So what do you do at Kainer?
Yeah, so I'm the product management advisor. So I help oversee the Wren AI portfolio launch, helping guiding on the growth, guiding the cross-functional teams for the strategic planning execution, and, you know, just focusing on delivering the seamless text-to-SQL solution that will really empower our users to, you know, chat with their data, don't worry about all of the things in the background.
That's exciting. So I hear that there's some exciting news about Wren AI happening as well.
There is indeed. So, you know, it's the time of the month. Of course, it's October. So what does it mean? It's Hacktoberfest. We're very proud to be part of Hacktoberfest. So our Wren AI open source project is actively participating. If any of your PRs get successfully merged, we're going to give you some little swag with our little Wren AI bird. So please be sure to check out our website and check out our GitHub project and contribute. We want to make the open source community as warm and welcoming for everybody.
That's awesome. Contributing in Hacktoberfest, very nice. So, and we'll have the link to all that in the show notes, obviously. So Wren AI is open source. Before we talk about Wren AI some more, though, let's jump back again a bit to William. And maybe, William, you can tell us more. You said you've been in the Trino community for a long time and with Kainer. So tell us a bit more about what Kainer does, or like what's your offering. I see here the website looks very fancy, right? Like, And when I look on your website, it talks about a self-service data for data warehouses and for data analysts. And I see the product here called, where is it now? Kainer Enterprise. So tell us more about that.
Okay, sure. So first, let me introduce myself again. I'm William, CEO of co-founder of Kainer. And my background is actually in data engineering. So I've been battled with Hadoop, Hive, this kind of distributed system for a really long time. And I co-founded Kainer with my friend Howard, I think around 2018. And we've actually been working together since college. So it's like 13 years from now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really long. And we're both engineers, and we're always been heavily involved in this open source community. And our journey with Kainer actually began with our first open source project, which is not related to data engineering at all. It's a CMS framework, a content management system framework. And it's designed for developers to quickly customize their system and support for the websites. And after our first initial release, I believe we quickly accumulated over 2,000 stars within 3 weeks.
Wow.
And And as we work on this project, we found out that there's a recurring need among our users. They all want to bring all the they want to bring all the data from MongoDB, from MySQL into one dashboard, into one place so they can enter the data together. And we realized at that point that the real pain point of our business users are actually in this data pipeline stage. I mean, how to efficiently collect, process, and visualize all the data from multiple sources. And this insight actually led us to pivot our focus towards building our first data platform product, Ken Enterprise. Yeah, so Ken Enterprise, like I said, it was-
Hang on before. I have to say, so yeah. You're mentioning both MongoDB and what was the other one?
Cool.
Yeah, both of them like in the like terrible phase of our data world history where everyone thought NoSQL is the best. So you were trying to solve that problem that there was NoSQL support and people wanted to create queries, right? So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then you ended up coming up with a data platform and that's Kenna Enterprise now.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So Ken Enterprise, like I said, it was built on top of Trino, the fork version of Trino. And Trino is an excellent federated query engine. It's a great solution for data teams. And as I remember at that time, I did my research on several query engines because at that time we need to pick a foundation. And I think I researched on Trino. At that time, it's still called Presto. It's still in Presto.
Yeah, it was Presto SQL back then, yeah.
Presto SQL. And I researched on Hive, Spark, and also Impala as well. Mm-hmm. And I want to shout out to Trino team because the code base of Trino is so well organized and clean that I can actually build on top of it and build our product on top of it. It's still one of the best code base I've ever seen at this stage. Yeah,
we try to keep it clean. It's a lot of work, but.
Yeah, I can see that. So that's why we picked Trino as our foundation. And I'm really glad we do that, actually. And as we working on Ken Enterprise and we expand our users in Taiwan, as we work with our companies in Taiwan, particularly in manufacturing, like TSMC as well, and finance and retail sectors, all these companies. And we found ourselves engaging with teams that actually use the data rather than just data teams. So we realized that business teams that needed more than just a powerful federated query engine. Mm-hmm. They need companies that they're facing challenges like data authorization. For example, one of a customer, they need data from another department from their CRM, but they have no authorization to access this system. So they need a process, an authorization process to set up the access control easily. Mm-hmm. And this fragmentation of access control or data makes the access pretty difficult, which in turn makes any kind of analytics job challenging to achieve. So I believe Ken Enterprise actually addressed this issue pretty effectively. Yeah. So
yeah.
I think maybe then-
they are making pretty easy to understand any database.
That's cool. So you've been using it a little bit, Himanshu?
Yeah, I have been using it a little bit. I have also tried it with MongoDB. I have tried it with the PostgreSQL. Mainly, I work on Postgres, so that's how I try to use. And always trying to experiment with it like in a different way, like how we can achieve this, how we can achieve in a different way. So yeah, that's a good that they have created with a good product along the way.
That's awesome. So. So you are taking advantage of Trino in the sense that you're allowing all these connectors to connect to different databases and you added a security layer. I also understand you did something on the client side that I thought is very interesting. Do you want to tell us about your Postgres layer?
Oh, sure. Actually took our team lots of time to build this layer because when we build our product on top of Trino, we found out that Trino is pretty new to, especially to companies in Taiwan. So some of the BI tools or some of the application that they're already been using has really hard time to connecting to Trino. And so at that time we're still deciding whether we want to build a ODBC and JDBC layer with for Trino, or do we want to do other things to enhance the connectivity. And then we found out that actually I think it's CockroachDB, or I forgot the DB name. They're actually using PostgreSQL wire protocol right now. And they build a protocol in their product to enhance the connectivity a lot, to connect to different BI tools or ETL tools. So that actually inspired us to build this protocol. And it's worked like this. We build a PostgreSQL wire protocol. So it's actually open source in their product as well. And there are lots of documents describing how you can build the underlying messaging protocols. So clients like C Sharp, Postgres drivers, or Python, Alchemy, they can easily choose Postgres driver to connect to Kenner through Postgres wire protocol. Yeah.
Okay.
Looks like that.
That's very interesting. And obviously, that enables people that have old applications that only support PostgreSQL, which is the most widely used database at this stage, so to connect to Trino, then that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of work actually, because a lot of syntax between Postgres and Trino are actually quite different. So we need to transform from Postgres dialect into Trino dialect, and also. For example, Trino Postgres has a hidden field called OID, Object ID, and for some BI tools, they're going to select that field at the initial stage when they're connecting to Postgres drivers. So we need to support that hidden field in Trino as well. So it's kind of like that. Lots of work around that actually.
That's very interesting. So that's cool. So you've basically been using Trino for a long time. And then you also, I guess, since you're maintaining a fork, that's obviously what everyone does that is a vendor on top of Trino. You're also contributing back some of those changes, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I think we contribute things like S3 connectors.
Mm-hmm.
I think at that time, back in few years ago, there's a performance issue at S3 connectors, and we contribute that as well.
Cool.
And yeah, and other things follow up actually. Yeah, we did lots of things, and we try to contribute to the community because we have our love to Trino. We want that every Trino users can be can use the can solve the issue we solve already. Yeah.
Cool. All right, so maybe so that's good. Very interesting to, and it's good to see that you know, Trino is used everywhere, and even if it's not always obvious, the insiders know, and we are all pulling together and improving Trino together. So that's cool. Maybe we want to pivot now, because our main product we want to talk about today is RenAI. So Yadya, do you want to tell us a bit more about what motivated you all to switch gears and like add another product, right? Like it's quite a different product from what Kenner Enterprise is, I'm assuming. At the same time, maybe it's complementary. What caused you to step into the realm of AI and that kind of use?
The way I see it, you know, at the core, Kenner has always been about data. Well, first we started with CMS, then with the Kenner Enterprise. But one of the things we saw is like the ability of non-technical teams and technical teams to be able to access this data.
Mm-hmm.
And with the power, you know, with the power of AI coming nowadays, how can we tap into LLM to make this data more easy to access? So we actually have two versions of RenAI. We have the open source edition, which is targeting more like developers, data scientists. You can download from the GitHub repo, be able to deploy it locally. And then we have an off-the-shelf cloud solution, the RenAI Cloud, which is targeting more like business and product teams that they don't want to install anything. They just want to connect their data sources and be able to interface and interact instantaneously. So both of them have the connect your data, talk to your data, just a different way, once more, developer, requiring you to, you know, start CLI, have Docker in your computer and things. But the goal has always been like, you have all of this data sources, you have all of this data silos, and some of your data insights have to come by unifying this and talking.
And so you are enabling a user, and we'll see a demo shortly, but like you are basically enabling a user to sort of like ask like normal language questions about the data.
Correct. So one of the things, like if you're an e-commerce team or a sales and support team for these e-commerce websites, instead of having your purchase data, your clients and shipping data in like three different silos, plug it in and you'll be able to ask the questions like, hey, what is the product that's been selling the most in this region? And you get the information, what's the product that having problems? What are the problems that we're seeing? You know, it's more of a logical flow and you can back up by all of this data.
Cool. And then Himanshu, you found out about it because it's open source from a friend you were saying earlier today.
Yeah. I found out from my friend, like he was building some health advisory AI. So he was just trying to connect different databases and with AI. And he was basically a non-technical guy. So he just tried the brain AI understanding the different databases with it. So he just hit me like, use this. It is very great product to use. So that's how I got to know about brain AI.
Yeah, and because you are a developer yourself, you were able to sort of like understand the code a bit. So maybe tell us a bit about the code of RainAI. Like, what's it written in? Like,
yeah. So RainAI basically, Brain Engine is basically written in Java, and they are kind of migrating it to the Rust. And the RainAI part, which is front end part, which is written in the Next.js and JavaScript. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So.
And it is also to understand this code base very easy. Like RainAI, to understand this code base, it is very easy. And you have a lot of support from the RainAI team as well. Like I can just hit William, like, what is this? I don't understand. So he just hit me like, this is the code and this is how it is written. So they have great support from the developers as well.
Awesome. So you sort of like found out about it, played around with it a bit, and then ended up coding on it a bit. And then...
Yeah.
Is that also then how you found out about Trino or?
Yeah. So Trino, I didn't know about the Trino. So William just assigned me the task like, can you try to connect, try to build the connector with Trino to RainAI? So I just got to understand about the Trino, and Trino is also a very great product, I think, because you can connect different databases in a similar manner, like MongoDB, SQL. You can just play it with around with same language. So I think it is a great product as well. And that's how I got to learn about the Trino. And also, I'm kind of trying to build different things with Trino right now.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. So when you implement it, like we can, like the pull request is going to be shared, obviously, in the show notes, but what did you end up having to do to connect to Trino? Like since RainAI is written in Java, are you just using the JDBC driver to connect to Trino basically and somehow then send queries across, or are you doing something else?
Basically, they have just a plug and play model. So you have to just configure the parameters. Like what can I say? Like you guys have like what we can say like. Sorry, I forgot that name. You have that connector string. So you just give them that string and they will just try to parse it. And okay, then you can play around with it. Yeah.
Cool. That's interesting. So can we maybe have a look? Can William, can you maybe show us a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, demo or RainAI.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let me share my screen. Second here.
In the meantime, for those of you interested, the RainAI website is very good, clean, and you can find a lot of information here. There's a free trial for all of you that want to play around with it. You can try it very easily. And of course, if you want to really go into the depth of it, you can also go to the pull request from Himanshu here, where, as you see here, it's not too big of a broad pull request, right? There's like not too much going on, really. So it's quite amazing, right? To like add a bunch of definitions, a bunch of configuration screens, and there you go. And you have your integration with Trino, which speaks to the cleanliness of the code base, which is really cool. And you see here at canner/RainAI is where you can find the source code. So that's really interesting. But now let's switch over to... Williams.
Okay, so before jumping to demo, I want to share a little bit about what makes Trainer special and also a little bit of our architecture, actually.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
Yeah, so what him and she mentioned was actually, he mentioned Rust, he mentioned Next.js, he mentioned JavaScript. It's actually consists into different components. For example, we use Next.js to build our brand UI part. So when we saw the UI in the browser, when you ask the questions, it actually goes into our UI component first. And then the UI will forward this user request to the AI service here. So the AI service here will get the question from users and use a REG pipeline to generate a SQL and then put the SQL into our engine. So I want to emphasize on this RAIN engine because it's a pretty crucial component of RAIN AI. It converts the SQL from AI service into the target data source dialect. For example, if you input ask a question, we generate a SQL. If you're using BigQuery or we're using Trino, we're convert into your data sources SQL. So it's pretty cool. And we use IBIS underlying component to convert the SQL and to run the SQL and return a result to the client.
Okay. So for those of you not knowing, IBIS is a Python-based system for converting data frames and SQL and stuff like that. They were a guest a while ago and Trino Community Broadcast as well. And you're using that in your engine. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And a little bit more because we also saw a trend called, I think it's called Composable Data Stack. Mm-hmm. And it's happened in ecosystem like IBIS, Data Fusion, this kind of projects. And also Trino, actually. I saw Trino trying to do something different, something interesting. Mm-hmm. And we try to fit our project on RAIN engine, especially RAIN engine, into this composable data stack. So we can leverage IBIS to handle the connectivity part. And we use Data Fusion only for the planner part, I mean, to parse the SQL, to generate an underlying SQL, and to put it into IBIS to generate a SQL underlying. So it kind of worked like this, actually. I want to share this tab for you guys a little bit. Because what we saw from the developers trying to leverage LLM to build SQL text to SQL product, they were facing the issues that they simply put DDL or data schema into LLM and trying to get accurate SQL from the pipeline, but most of the time it's not good enough because it's lack of semantic context. By semantics context, I mean things like calculations. How do you calculate your KPIs? Like how do you calculate your metrics? For example, your customer churn rate, customer acquisition. How do you calculate that? How do you define define that? And also relationships. Especially this part, because we saw a SQL generated from LLM. They often confuse them which table they should use to do the join. So
they join. Yeah, imagine that gets even more complicated when you connect to like data lakes and stuff like that, where the data is often kind of like a mess, and it's not like an Oracle database from 20 years ago, where it's like referential integrity is enforced and everything is like keys everywhere and stuff like that. It's just often just like a dumping ground of data, right? So I'm sure that's a lot more complicated. So with this setup, you're then basically kind of making sure that the queries that come out actually work, right? Like if you ask a random AI, it's just going to give you some SQL and you're going to plug it in and it's not going to work. So you're improving this a whole lot, basically.
Yeah. By providing this so-called semantic context, and we call it MDL, Model Definition Language, in RAIN engine, actually. So you can, you can think of RAIN engine as a semantic layer for LLM, actually. And it's work like this. When you define the models, you define customers or define orders, you can define the relationship between them, between the models. And based on the relationship, you can further define a new field and you can put the relationship reference into your field. For example, when we try to define how much our customer consumed, and we can do things like, it must be the customer's orders, total price, and aggregate all the total price into this field. So it kind of works like Excel. You can define your formula by referencing another cell, and that cell can reference another cell. So it's kind of like you can put everything in a chain together and define your relationship, define your calculations metrics all together in one file or one definition.
Okay. Yeah.
To add on to this, I know it sounds like complex, but we actually done a very nice job on the UI. So it's pretty much drag and drop, fill in the information. So it's a lot less complex for you to build your MDL.
Yeah.
But it's good to know the underlying layer as well, right? Like, so that I'm assuming that gets persisted and saved and everything. So so that's really interesting.
Yeah. So when we get a SQL from LLM, the SQL might be as simple as select from the orders, but we all know orders have lots of calculation field underlying. So we'll generate a SQL, a complex SQL like this for users. Yeah. So it kind of works like this. This rate engine is a pretty crucial part for us. And we use this, let me share it again. Give me a second here. Oh, here. Okay. Yeah. So back to our diagram, we use rate engine to provide the semantic context to AI service and generate the underlying SQL and transpile the SQL into target data source and execute them. So kind of like this.
And I see on the top there, it says Ren AI service, and then it pumps it into OpenAI or an LLM. I'm assuming that's currently the case, and you're probably going to look at like making that pluggable with different AI providers or whatever, right? Like different models.
Yeah. Good eye, actually, because we already support like Ollama. You can put in other models into that.
I guess you have to update the diagram.
Yeah.
Well, the default we do show you just plugging your API key for OpenAI. But if you want to try with different LLMs, you can just do it on the internet.
Yeah, so you can use like Mistral or the open source ones or like Gemini or whatever, right? Basically, so over time. So that's cool. Have you done much testing in terms of like how different they behave or how also it improves with newer versions of the LLMs?
Yeah, actually, yes, because so far we observed that OpenAI models has best performance overall. Mm-hmm. But we saw lots of open source users are actually using Ren AI in their own network, own clusters. So they cannot use any public service like OpenAI. They need to build their own models like using Ollama. And that's what we saw from majority of our users actually. And that's one thing that open source can help us. It can help us understand how the world really looks like, not from your imagination. So lots of
I guess that's interesting. Like obviously like if you like have your like customer specific data and sales data and everything, you don't necessarily want to pump that across to some public cloud provider that you don't even know what they're doing with, right? So that's interesting. So you can have it totally completely siloed as well in a way then.
Yeah. And I can say that we're working on improved Ren AI with different models. We're trying to separate the pipelines into several little pipelines, and each pipeline only do specific jobs, so we can cater the job to specific models. Mm-hmm. And if a model handle a task like too complicated, it will go wrong. But if we handle only a specific task, it will do it perfectly. So that's what we're trying to do here to make it more compatible and more to better with other LLM models. Yeah.
And on the cloud version, we do care a lot about privacy and security because you don't, if you're plugging sales data, you know, financial data, you don't want anybody else to have that. So we try by making every a multimodal different task, we also want to limit in how we filter and clean up the PI data so you can keep secure and safe.
Yeah, that's yeah, you're obviously separating that. Question, Himanshu, when you were playing around with the open source version of RenAI, what did you have to deploy to get it running? Like I saw now in the diagram from William that there is like the engine, there's the AI integration, there's the front end. How complex is it to deploy that and run it yourself? Like, can you run this on your laptop, or do you need to like have like five different servers for all sorts of things?
No. It is pretty easy to deploy on my laptop. Like, we just have to like have a Docker container services up, and you just have to run one command, and your code base is up. Like, whatever you want to test it, you can test it around.
And
that's how it is easy. Yeah.
Okay, so in the deployment, then, William, it's similar. If people want to run this in their own system, they can just deploy it on Kubernetes. Or
have to care about the environment variables only. And once you run that command, like up the Docker container, and all the services will be up, and whatever you want to do, you can do it with it.
Cool. And then once you have it deployed, you have this UI that you're showing us there, William, which looks really clean. And nice.
Yeah.
And that is for multiple users then, right? Like you have one deployment with a bunch of servers that handle it, but the UI then is for multiple users, right?
Yeah. You can serve it to multiple users, of course.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so at this environment, I usually set up with the Trino data source. And I use the TBCH catalog, the MessageBoy schema here, you can see here. So it's pretty standard TBCH data. For example, it's region and customers, all these kind of data sets. I put it in and can preview the data here. And you can define the relationship you want. Like you can define the relationship, for example, customers to customer key, a reference to a line item, customer key here. Orders, actually. Orders, customer key, like this. And it's a one-to-many relationship. You can define your relationship, define your calculation field here, you can pick your relation, and you can reference the relations and relations of relations, define the field, define the formula here. So it's kind of easy compared to writing the MDO by yourself. Yeah. So
William, maybe you also want to share a little bit about Views, how you can enhance the MDL with Views.
I mean, compared to writing MDL.
Yes.
Okay. So if you do want to write MDO by yourself, it will work like this. You need to write the JSON by yourself like this. For example, it's from customers. And it's actually TBCH data as well. So you have to write this customers and write the SQL here, like from the customers table. And another other properties like columns, the type of the column, is it null and expression and all the properties like description.
And you can import that into the UI then somehow, or?
We welcome contribution from contributors. We haven't done that actually.
Yes. Okay.
Well, one of the key things on the MDL file is the ability for you to add description to your table and description to your fields, because that's what makes RenAI and the RenAI engine so powerful. It gives us a lot of context to understand what is this table in relation to this table. So when you ask a question, we have enough information for the RenAI to know this is the schema and this is how to make the query.
Okay, so you can kind of like describe more, give it more semantic knowledge about the data than what the field name alone is. Like often, like there's some corporate policies that like, you know, table names has to be like TBL blah 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 and like random numbers and whatever, so you can give it like more meaningful names and like more description, and then that information flows into the AI engine to understand your data better, basically.
I want to share one thing that is installed from our customers, because when they ask for more columns to be used in the system from IT team, the process is pretty long, so they tend to ask 10 columns at once, like give me column under -1 to column under -10, give me 10 columns like this, and then they're going to figure out what the column is for after that. So when we see the schemas from our users, the column name is arbitrary. It doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. Mm-hmm. Yeah, column under dash one and column under dash two. So they have to put more description in the semantic context, so to let users or LM to understand what it actually means. Yeah.
Cool. And then when you go about setting all these relationships up and stuff in the REN UI, that's an initial step, right? Like you do that, and then once it's set up, you probably can refine it, but like you can use it pretty quickly then, right?
Yeah. So when you define the semantics required, you can ask questions like this. For example, a list of suppliers and their nations. So underlying the questions will be input into AI service, and AI service will fetch the context from the engine and return the candidates for you. So I think it's a pretty interesting process we do over here, because we confirm with the users, what do you mean? Do you mean this or do you mean this? Don't you mean that?
So you're like making it into more understandable text for the AI to work better.
Yeah.
To some degree. Yeah. So you're kind of helping it prompt engineer.
Yes, exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah. So when you
So on this tip, what's really important, it's like on the each of the results, it might also have a different SQL query that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you choose one of the candidates, Ren and I will break down the SQL for you. For example, I choose one of the answer from the candidates. So Ren and I will break down the SQL one by one. So you can understand what it actually means step by step.
Cool.
Yeah, I pick from nation, pick from suppliers, and join them together. And I solve from the result if the result is what I expected.
Oh, wow. So that's kind of, I mean, this is like probably not the core use case, but that's kind of like teaching. Like it's literally kind of teaching you how to write the more complex query, right? Like you could go and look at the simple one and go, oh, yeah, okay, I understand what it asks. Now what's the next step? Oh, like it's literally a little bit of a teaching process then if you go through that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, because one of the issues we saw from our users that when they try to build their own LM models, text-to-SQL solution, is that users will not be able to trust the answers. So to provide to the interface like this step-by-step explanation, our users will be able to actually trust the answer because it already show the process transparently to them. Yeah,
and also I guess like because they can view the SQL, they can verify, like over time they'll hopefully learn a bit more SQL and then be able to tell that like, well, there's a bug or this is like making a logical mistake and whatever, right? Like I'm sure this is getting more complicated as well. So that's cool. Very interesting. I see also this is like a nice syntax highlighting and everything. So people can hopefully read that query pretty nicely. It's nicely formatted. So that's handy. So you can even potentially plug and copy that over into your whatever BI application for like a permanent dashboard and whatever else in Canva or some other system as well, right?
Oh yeah. We actually have plugins on Google Sheets and Excel, so our users can easily connect from the Excel to get data from the questions they ask on Ren AI and export it into Excel and do it part over there. Yeah.
Terrible. Excel as a data engineering tool, it's terrible. It's never going to go away. It's been terrible 20 years ago and it's still terrible.
But it's one of the most adopted, you know.
I know, that's the problem.
You have to join them.
I know.
Yeah, we cannot fight it. Yeah,
it's a long standing joke in like the whole data engineering consultancy world. It's the most widely used BI tool is a spreadsheet.
And the biggest database.
that's really cool. So this result here is then available to anyone that wants to see that, like other users as well, and like potentially they can export it and stuff like that. And I'm guessing you can also like ask follow-up questions, right? This is a bit of a dialogue with the AI, is it?
Yeah, it's a bit of dialogue, actually. So, for example, I can ask, could you get me the
Like, could you say something like, I'm only interested in countries from Europe or whatever, something like that? Like,
oh, sure, sure. Let me, how about I say things like, only in Europe? Oh, wait, wait, Algeria. This way, actually.
Algeria would be easier because it's one country. Europe, it would have to understand which country is where, which might be additional semantic data that you might have to supply, but that's interesting. That's cool. So while it's providing and running this, it goes back to OpenAI. And a related question I just had to that as well is, when it does that, isn't that going to get expensive over time? Like when the SaaS, you are having to provide your own OpenAI key, like as a customer, right? And then it goes into my OpenAI bill, basically, right?
In the open source, you provide your own key, your own developer key. So if you run it locally, you put your own budget to be able to build. The team has tried to optimize the AI engine to be very effective. But yeah, the more questions you ask, the more the cost goes on.
Yeah, yeah. And when you use the cloud version?
Pretty much we have it pre-packaged. We give you like it's a set number of questions that you can ask per month.
Oh, okay, and then you just like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so it looks like this. When you ask more, follow up asking more questions, and the history will become the context, and we'll add like this, add a filter here to filter out the Algeria country.
Yeah. That's cool, yeah.
Yeah, so if you as a new user trying to play a little bit with Rain AI, you can actually pick our sample data sets, like e-commerce or human resource. So if we start with e-commerce sample data sets, we prepackaged for you. All the models, the descriptions, the relationships will be set up actually. And we also have some simple questions for you. You can ask them and you can see the power of Rain AI pretty quickly without setting up your own data sources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, because you can sort of learn by looking at like an existing setup. That's cool.
So what's fun about the e-commerce data, we actually got it from Kaggle and we download the files. William set it up for me and I was doing the MDL. It took around 20 minutes to fill all the information, the relationships. If you go from like completely not knowing the data to like building this data model, and once you have it set up with this example, you can start asking questions like, what is the city with the most customers? And we also give you like we set up some questions that you would like to ask based on the information that we have.
So it only took you like 20 minutes for like this data set? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. From completely not knowing this e-commerce data to like building the relationships and descriptions.
And what's that Kaggle thing that you mentioned?
Oh, it's a very like famous website. If you're interested in a lot of data exploration and data science, you can check out different projects and you can contribute. And very easy for you to access data sets.
Yeah,
you practice your data skills.
Yeah, it's very useful. There's a lot of example data sets, open data sets, and it's free to use. So it's very, very cool. We use that too as well for playing around and learning. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So simple data sets are good for users to start with Rain AI. So it's the only model set up. You can see the simple questions you could ask. And I just asked the question, what is every score of reviews submitted for orders placed by customers in each city? It's a pretty complex question, actually. But Rain AI is able to understand what you mean and provide answers like this. Yeah.
Hmm. So when you get these results, it's very much like, it looks like very notebooky. Always has the table of results. Are you planning to add more visualizations maybe or so for the output in Rain AI? Or are you going more down the idea of, well, once you have the SQL, you can plug it into some other tool to make charts or whatever. I don't know.
Oh yeah, good questions actually. We do have text to answer and text to chart on our roadmap. For example, when you ask the questions, instead of giving you a table, we'll give you an answer. For example, the average score is 4.2, like this. We give you the answer, the summarization instead of.
Mm-hmm.
and you can further click a button like visualize this result for me, and our Rain AI will visualize the result and give you a chart, for example. But it took us some time to build this because we value the privacy really much. So we cannot use OpenAI to put all your data into OpenAI and generate chart to generate the answer for you. So so that's why we're experimenting with OpenAI models, not OpenAPI, not OpenAI models.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be able to let users host their own models and to be able to generate answers based on the data.
Okay. Yeah, you know, that's fair enough. And then obviously people would like get the answer, but also have the opportunity to go, well, how did you get to that answer? And then you would go and explore the SQL against the that. So it's, you're kind of building on top of what you have and like expanding it nicely.
Because for us right now, what's very important is trust where the answer comes from. Because there's always some hesitation that we've seen people like with this type of solution. How you're really getting the answer, where what are you getting these parameters from, right? Even if we told you 4.5, what are you using to calculate?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a healthy doubt, right? Like, don't take everything at face value though. So now that's really cool. So Rain AI is now available, free trial, you said, Hacktoberfest. Looks very polished and clean already, so I love it. It's very interesting. What's next?
We actually have our like I said, we launched our SaaS solutions recently, and at this SaaS solution, we actually did a good job on prepackaging all the semantics you need for different systems. For example, you can import data from HubSpot. And we know that semantics is so important for the accuracy of AI models. So we prepackage all the semantics, all the relationships, all the calculations, matches you need for HubSpot, and you just need to import all the data.
Okay, so you're doing a lot of the heavy lifting of understanding those domains already for customers. That's cool.
Yeah. So for the next steps, for the next following weeks and months, we're going to expand from HubSpot to other systems as well, like GA4, GoNotice4, and maybe Salesforce, maybe Stripe, all the data people care about when they do the customer acquisition or do the funnel analysis. Yeah.
Cool.
And I think one of the heavy lifting that we're trying to do as a team is to grab data sets with specific use case. So, for example, if you're a marketer, if you get HubSpot, we already also give you some example of questions that you want to ask. We don't want to avoid that whole data paralysis, like what do I do with this data, what should I ask? If you click our boilerplates, we already just know, plug your data, we have some questions for you, so you can move forward in your explorations. And if you want to add not just HubSpot, you want to add something from your Google Sheets or something from any other third-party source, you can combine these different sources. So that way we can help you expand.
Cool. So Rain AI is pretty new. Ultimately, like very, very new. Do you have like people using this already, like actively in like customers and like people that are like trying it out quite a bit? I saw like you launched it on Product Hunt as well, and there's a lot of stars already and stuff like that. So,
So we do have quite a bit coming on the open source community who are installing it locally. And those also, since we launched in Product Hunt, the cloud version, we have quite a few people bring on the SaaS version for trials to see which version works best for them.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, it's very exciting.
Get people try. If you want it locally, you want it on the cloud, pick your poison.
Yeah, obviously, like it's nice to play around locally and understand the code, but ultimately, you might not want to have to deal with the hassle of running this thing on your own. Right? So the cloud offering is also very cool. So that's very cool. Well, thank you again. Anything else you want to tell us about Ren or about your next product at Cano, or what you are up to, Himanshu, next in your prolific open source Hacktoberfesting and working?
Yeah, we'll just contribute to the open source project. That's all from my side.
Himanshu asked for contribution.
Yeah,
already.
Yeah, I have already asked for it. And learning new things from the William and you guys as well, man friend. Yeah.
Awesome, cool. All right, well, as I mentioned, I will have, let me switch over. I will have in the show notes, I will have links for Canner and RAN AI and the pull request, so you can check out what Himanshu did. And then also the, obviously the documentation, how to set up Trino as a data source with RAN. And also the launch and product hunt. And I'll add the Hacktoberfest call out as well. So should be very interesting for people to see what they can do. Congratulations on the launch. Looks like a very cool product. I love it. And we'll be watching and we'll look forward to see you maybe at Trino Summit, which is the next thing I want to talk about. And that is our... Yeah, so thanks again for joining me. I'm going to just round this out and I will hopefully see you at Trino Summit later this year.
Yeah, of course. Of course, we'll be there.
Bye. All right, well, that was super interesting. William and Yadia and Himanshu definitely got something cool going there with RAN AI and Canner. Definitely something worth playing around, and it's great to see Trino spreading around the globe and being used everywhere. In that realm, it's important to understand that Trino Summit is happening again on the 11th and 12th of December, and the call for speakers is out. We already have a couple of very promising presentations. I'm hoping that William and Yadia might also step up and show us something about their product and maybe some of the hackery with the PostgreSQL dialect or other things would be really cool. So please do join us for Trino Summit. Register now. And also, of course, if you're interested in sponsoring the event, our main sponsor, obviously.
Thank you to our sponsor, Starburst Data, for helping to make the Trino Community Broadcast happen.
Starburst is very much making the Trino Community Broadcast happening, but also the Trino Summit and all the other events. So thank you again for all the hard work. When it comes to rounding out otherwise, there's two other efforts that are going on. I'm still trying to close out all the open pull requests that have been stale. So if you have a pull request out in the Trino community that hasn't gotten the attention it needs, please reach out to me or other maintainers so we can finish those off. And much more so, that's actually like been really good. We managed to get it down to about 250 open pull requests from over 800 last year. So a lot of them got merged and some of them were also just stale and dead or the wrong approach. But the next thing we want to tackle is our issues. We have about 2,500 open issues in our GitHub issue tracker. So please do have a look at the issues you filed in the past. If they're no longer valid or you found a fix for your problem, just close them, maybe add the answer. We will probably start automating some of that cleanup. But we'll be doing it nicely. Don't worry. I'll be on top of all of that. But it's going to come. We want to make sure we are very responsible to all of you. Last but not least, before I jump off for the end of the day here today, Trino Community Broadcast 67 is coming in 3 weeks. And we're going to be talking about a new connector that was really added to Trino a couple of releases ago. And that's the Exasol connector, a very fast database. That should be a very interesting use case with Trino, obviously, with very fast databases and then lakehouse combinations, something that's happening more and more and more. And I think that is it for today. Thank you again to William and Yadia and Himanshu for joining me. And that is for it from me out of Victoria in the evening. And I will get all this live in the next couple of hours, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to the Trino Community Broadcast, brought to you by Starburst Data.